You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Wednesday night, and we're talking Cincinnati Bengals as usual on the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I'm Anthony Cazenza. Happy to be joined by John Sheeran. It's a little bit of a lull time, as we've said, for the past couple of weeks in the NFL calendar and for the Cincinnati Bengals. But they've still been making some headlines, making some news. We're going to talk about it. John, how you doing, buddy? Happy almost February, I guess, if you can believe that. January's cruising by.
January 2021 is cruising by. I'm feeling good though. Feeling like got some good prep for the show. It's gonna be a good show. I feel good about it.
Yeah, there's quite a bit to get to. We're gonna tell you a quick announcement in just a second. There's a lot of news and notes. We're centering around Bengals coaches, what they may or may not do in free agency, with according to some different sources around within the organization. We'll talk about that. And we've got a second version of State Your Case. We've got an interesting one that has been kind of making some headlines throughout the Twitter outlets and all kinds of – there's so many draft experts out there now, whether you're sitting on your own couch in front of your computer screen or maybe in front of a TV screen. There's so many draft experts out there, so we've got to chime in. And then, of course, we've got a free agency profile of a potential target for the Cincinnati Bengals. We're going to talk about some strengths and weaknesses, and then we're going to drop the mic and get out of here. So let's start, before we get to the news and notes, John Sheeran, let's start with an announcement. We said last week that we have been trying, we're working on getting a lot of guests as we gear up to the Super Bowl. You know, a lot of guys make themselves available, and we want to bring you some content aside from what we normally do. We like to get some prominent people on the show connected to the Cincinnati Bengals. So we put feelers out to a lot of different folks, and we're starting to hear back from some of them, one of which he will either be joining us next Wednesday, the 27th, or the following Wednesday, but we've got him dialed in. Ken Anderson will be joining us on the program once again. We had him in the summer talking about the Cincinnati Bengals, so we're going to talk to him about Joe Burrow, how the 2020 Bengals season ended up, his Super Bowl memories, and all kinds of different stuff. So a big guest lined up and many more to come. So, John, we are pretty excited about that. Once we lock down which Wednesday he'll be joining us on the program, we'll let you guys know. But pretty excited about that, man.
Yeah, it's, I think, what, now we just passed the 40-year anniversary of the Freezer Bowl? Was that 1981, 1982, yeah, I guess? 81, so wow. We can definitely have to talk to him about that. Last time we talked to him was back in, I think, June or July, and that was one of my favorite interviews that we've done on the show, so definitely can't wait to talk to him again.
Yeah, and for those, very excited about that. Awesome. He brings a ton of energy and a ton of knowledge. That's just something I had never spoken to him before this summer, and just obviously hearing him talk some X's and O's and his recall of stuff from his playing days in the early 1970s and whatnot. It was pretty crazy. But so we're excited to have him back on. And in the meantime, show him some support on behalf of this program. Go to the Ken Anderson Alliance Foundation, support his charity. Charities need a lot of help this, over the past year or so. And his is a great cause. So go support him. We'll be promoting his charity as he comes on the program as well, but happy to have him with us. Let's now that we've got some announcements out of the way, we'll have some more obviously to come. But now that we have that out of the way, let's get into some news and notes, John. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the defensive line coach addition? I don't think Marion Hobby was announced by the time we took the air last week.
Yeah, it was just like Frank Pollock a couple weeks ago. They hired Marion Hobby, the new defensive line coach, in the middle of NFL divisional week. Like, they hired Pollock in the middle of wild card week. But yeah, Marion Hobby is the new defensive line coach. He replaces Nick Eason at that position. And Anthony, pretty solid resume for a guy who's been coaching defensive lines and defensive that side of the ball for the past 25 years. So let's kind of get into his resume and kind of what he brings to the team.
Yeah. You know, he was a guy to me that was a little under the radar in some respects. Not a name that, you know, I think a lot of people, I mean, at least as far as assistant coaches, positional coaches go, not a name that you thought of a bunch, but a guy that brings 2.5 decades of experience, and some of which I'm going to pull this up to share with everybody because you wrote the post, John, on CincyJungle.com to talk about his coaching career. We're going to pull up this article for you so you can see his resume. You know, 2.5 decades, as I mentioned, he was involved at Clemson, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But most recently, John, a productive stint with the Miami Dolphins. And I was really impressed specifically this last year. I was really impressed with, I guess, because of what he did against the Bengals, Kyle Van Noy coming over there and really – making a nice year for himself there. He had the hat trick of sacks against the Bengals in that game after they let up, you know, 6. And I have to believe that game really kind of said, hey, who's this Marion Hobby guy for some of the Bengals head coaches, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like that Dolphins defensive line added like a bunch of young pieces this past offseason. Raquan Davis from Alabama, I think. They drafted Christian Wilkins, I think, in Hobby's first year with them in 2019. So just that whole defensive line kind of came together, and it wasn't like the strength of that unit because they had Xavien Howard and Byron Jones, right, and that secondary playing well. But I think that defensive line kind of overproduced relative to what the expectations were, and that really boosted. I think that it was a testament for how good that Hobby is at teaching technique and getting results out of his guys. And before he was with Miami, he was with the Jacksonville Jaguars for a couple years. The first year, obviously, was Saxonville. They had like 55 sacks. And that unit carried them to the AFC Championship game with the offense captained by Blake Bortles. So last 4 years, the Hobby's been in the NFL. He's been in Florida just getting sacks after sacks for these units. And I think that was the emphasis for what they were looking for to replace Nick Eason. Because for the most part of Hobby's career, he's been not just a defensive line coach, but a defensive ends coach specifically. That's like kind of been his specialty. And that's really one of the weakest positions on the Bengals on their defense right now, because if Carl Lawson goes in free agency, you're left with Sam Hubbard and Khalid Kareem. So whoever you bring in to potentially replace Lawson, like, you're going to need immediate results immediately, because that's where the bulk of your sacks are going to come from, especially with Geno Atkins just not being who he was, even if Atkins isn't even on the team anymore. So I think they're counting on Hobby just utilizing what he does best and kind of developing whoever he has to coach for 2021. So I think that was a really key component in terms of who's going to replace Eason and who's going to be that main addition on the defensive coaching staff.
Yeah, apparently DJ Reader, another article on CincyJungle.com, was instrumental in bringing over Marion Hobby to the Cincinnati Bengals. So, you know, he kind of did a little recruiting job. A lot of people kind of were asking, you know, why was this guy available? Why didn't he stick around if he did such a good job at some of these last stints? Well, you know, maybe there's a pathway. I mean, number one, the Reader aspect was kind of, I guess, one element you can talk about there. The others were, you know, I mean, if you look at his resume, and every two years or so, for the most part, he kind of jumps around and looks for a new challenge and rebuilds a group and moves on. It's just kind of, you know, how it goes, I guess, as an assistant coach, a position coach in the NFL. You know, they usually sign 2-year contracts, and then, you know, unless there's a pathway maybe for ascension or something like that, they don't necessarily stick around. So I mean, I think it's a good hire for this team. And like you said, John, the emphasis by Zach Taylor and Lou Anarumo has to be in generating pressure and sacking the quarterback, you know, and it has to come from multiple areas, multiple players on the defensive line. It can't just come from Carl Lawson. We don't even know if he's going to stick around. I think we all hope he does. So it can't just come from Carl Lawson. It can't just come from Sam Hubbard. They need to find and generate pressure for the entire defense to be effective and potentially create more turnovers, which is another Achilles heel and has been for this defense under Lou Anarumo.
Right. So Hobby is, I guess, technically the third hire they've made. The other one being Frank Pollock, and the other one besides that being Troy Walters being promoted to wide receivers coach. So right now we have most of the staff kind of compiled, but there really is just one primary vacancy left, and that's running backs coach. And as it happens, earlier this week, we had a report from NFL Network's Tom Pelissero that said that former running backs coach Gary Brown will be interviewing with the Bengals. I think he said next week. So if you're listening to this podcast the week of the 20th, this interview could happen sometime in the week after this. But Brown, just like Pollock and just like Hobby, also brings a really, really positive resume to him. He was a running backs coach from 2009 to 2019, both with the Cleveland Browns and the Dallas Cowboys. But the main thing to really note here is that he joined the Cowboys in 2013, the same year that Frank Pollock joined the Cowboys as the assistant offensive line coach to Bill Callahan. And then from 2015 to 2017, Brown and Pollock were the running backs coach, offensive line coach. And if you can remember those years, I think the Cowboys had the top rushing attack in the entire NFL. And that was obviously with Ezekiel Elliott leading the charge. But, you know, Brown has had success basically with regardless of who his running back is back there. And I think really that Pollock connection in terms of just getting on the same page with the same, you know, language in terms of what they want to do, I think that is what will eventually bring Brown to Cincinnati here.
Absolutely crucial that, you know, those two, it seems as if the Bengals, in case you haven't noticed, seem to be reemphasizing the run game and its revitalization this offseason. New running backs coach, new offensive line coach. And oh, by the way, the offensive line coach is also a new position on the staff, run game coordinator. And this is a guy who worked with Ezekiel Elliott, did Brown. So, you know, he's a guy who's worked with top end talent. He'll have another one in Joe Mixon, presumably, as well as potentially Gio Bernard, if all things kind of play out a similar way. And actually, what's, you know, first of all, for this potential hire, Gary Brown, interesting story. I guess he kind of had a cancer situation last year, this past season, that took him out of football. And so now he's healthy again. I guess he had to do some chemotherapy and whatnot. Sounds like he's healthy again. So very interesting story, and kind of if he is on the mend and doing well and in remission, a feel-good story. And a guy who has, like I said, really coached some productive guys. And if you look at Ezekiel Elliott from the year that he had this year as compared to the year prior or the years prior under his tutelage, there's a big difference. 1,357 in terms of rushing yards in 2019, 979 this year, 12 touchdowns in 2019, 6 touchdowns, you know, as a rookie, 1,631 rushing yards, 15 touchdowns. So, I mean, there's some signs there.
Yeah, and as far as the personal story, I believe when he was originally coaching with the Browns, like in 2009, 2010, that's when he first ran into cancer. And unfortunately, he was able to overcome that, and he had been cancer-free for a while. And then I think, I believe his daughter was dealing with some form of a cancer as well. I don't know for sure.
I didn't know that, yeah.
This is the light research that I did with it. And then, yeah, so after the 2019 season, Dallas decided to part ways with him. And unfortunately, I think in the spring of 2020, he found a malignant tumor around his pancreas. So obviously with COVID, the COVID situation, and obviously his cancer, he decided to take a year off. But now, you know, he's just kind of back in the swing of things. And if he's not with the Bengals, he's probably going to be coaching again somewhere, because like you said, like the production's there. Even before Elliott, you had DeMarco Murray in 2014 had been an all-pro running back for Dallas. And that was really before, I guess, that entire offensive line kind of came together as the elite unit it was. It was like the start of the Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Travis Frederick trio that kind of bulldozed defensive lines back in the day. But even before Dallas, Peyton Hillis, if you remember him, he was on the cover of Madden after like a 1,300 or 1,200-yard season. That was with Brown as his running backs coach. So a lot of credited history and production on that resume. But again, the connection with Pollock is key here. With Pollock being the running game coordinator, the communication and the weekly game plan with that running backs coach is going to be crucial. But also, it couldn't hurt to have Joe Mixon have a fresh voice in terms of, you know, mentoring and coaching him, because it definitely worked for Zeke.
You just answered a question for Jonathan C. Thomas in our live Facebook chat saying, guys, I'm confused as to why a running backs coach is such a big deal. Well, John kind of answered most of the aspects as to that. Yeah, I mean, when you look at, well, why are these guys talking about a running backs coach? It's a position coach. It's a lower-end assistant coach on the team. Well, the fact is the Bengals need balance on offense. The fact is the Bengals have invested a lot of money at the running back position, and the fact is the Bengals' running game hasn't been very good since the end of 2018 when Frank Pollock was here. Now, to John's point, you've got a head coach, you've got an offensive coordinator, you've got an offensive line coach, and potentially a running backs coach, all kind of working in synchronization here because of the connections that they share in terms of past coaching experience, guys they've worked with. You mentioned the Callahan connection, Frank Pollock working with the Cowboys, and now the Bengals, etc. That's why it's a big deal. All of this can congeal into one thing that can be a massive boost to the Bengals offense. So that's why I think a running backs coach and talking about it is kind of a big deal, John.
Yeah, and let's not get it twisted. Like, the passing game is obviously more important. It's what's going to dictate how far the Bengals do end up going in 2021. But at the same time, you know, the passing game does open up opportunities for the run game, and they would like to maximize what they have with Joe Mixon. You know, like you said, they're paying him for the next 4 years at about an average of $10 million a year on the cap. So they want to get as much value with that as possible. And they had success with running the ball with Frank Pollock, but you might as well maximize it, hopefully also with the additions of personnel up front.
So let's keep it rolling. Now we're talking a lot about run game, and you know, we're talking about the guys who put the game plans together, the X's and O's, et cetera, but you need the talent, you need the bodies, you need the guys up front to help you move your offense forward. And a big talking point for this offseason is what the Bengals will or won't do in free agency along the offensive line. There are a lot of people who have been talking about this, who cover the Cincinnati Bengals, whether it's former players who cover the team or beat writers who have covered the team for a number of years. And of course, talking heads like John and myself keep talking about the offensive line options for the team. And by the way, it doesn't even mean just additions. It could mean subtractions that they make along the offensive line in come free agency time. So, John, there's been a couple of interesting articles and statements put out by one by Dave Lapham on the Bengals.com podcast that's out there, and then as well as some by Paul Daner Jr. based on some things that he is hearing. He, of course, PDJ is with The Athletic. So I guess, do we want to start with Lapham's comments what he said the Bengals will and won't do in his estimation?
Right. So he was on with Dan Horn, who does the Bengals Beat podcast, and they were answering like fan questions. And one of the questions was, how will the Bengals address offensive line in free agency? How will they attack it? And Lapp basically said that, you know, they, for all intents and purposes, think that they have depth and options at guard. And if there is going to be any spending or any type of additions, it's going to be on the edge, which he meant offensive tackle. And I think he name dropped Alejandro Villanueva as the guy that they won't look at because, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30 and he's didn't really finish the season really strong. But, you know, he basically towed the company line of saying, like, you know, they may address one position, but they think they have something in Xavier Suafilo. Maybe they bring back Quinton Spain. But if there's going to be additions, it's going to be an offensive tackle. And he basically, you know, gave the whole, you know, the classic narratives of not expecting too much in terms of the spending department. But overall, offensive guard, he thinks that they're solid there, and if there is going to be any additions, it's going to be a tackle. That's basically what he said.
So it's hard to disagree with him based on the team's track record and how they value guard. We know this. You and I have discussed this quite a bit, and here's my thing with some of the names and statements that Dave Lapham put out there, and it's not Dave Lapham that I'm taking issue with here. It's if he believes that this is the way the team is thinking. When you say you're putting heavy stock in a guy like Xavier Suafilo, I understand he's potentially a good scheme fit for what they're trying to run on offense. I understand he's a veteran presence. I understand they had a free agency investment in the guy. He played in 6 games last year, John. 6 games. And in one of the games, he played 12% of the offensive snaps. And that was upon his return in week 13. So basically, he left week 1 early with an injury and didn't play again until week 13 and finished the season out. And the last 4 games, he played 100% of the offensive snaps, but appeared in 6 games. And the fact that you're hanging your hat on a guy like that, who's been a journeyman guard his entire career, up and down PFF scores, played in 6 games the first year, the first year of his free agency contract. And that was a name specifically that Lapham mentioned that they really liked. I kind of was like, okay, not even competition.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that for starters, for the last couple of years, I think Lapham and Jeff Hobson, who's the editor of Bengals.com, like we identify them as the guys that have like some sort of insider knowledge and kind of pave the way for what to expect. But I think over the last couple of years, that hasn't been as much of the case. And specifically for this podcast, and all due respect to Lapham, the guy's a great guy and he's a great voice for the organization. I don't think he was necessarily speaking on stuff that he was told. I think he was just making a lot of conjecture based off of what he believes and what they conventionally value, I guess. So people freaked out about this podcast and they were like jumping off cliffs and stuff like that because it's Lapham who said it. And he's the guy who's predicting all these draft picks and allowing Frank Ragnow to get taken one pick ahead of them. But I think for the most part, this was a lot of speculation. And again, it's also January. So it's not like these are plans that are about to happen. So I think everyone needed to just take a deep breath and realize what he was actually saying.
That's true. And, you know, he talked about how the Bengals don't value guard. Dave Lapham played for Cincinnati for, 10, 11 years. And the vast majority of that was at both guard positions. So you may know a little thing about how they view guards traditionally, even though it's been a little while. And John and I have said this a bunch of times when it comes to free agency and offensive guard, the Bengals let Kevin Zeitler walk. They let Eric Steinbach walk. They let others walk. And really one of the only main investments, and I think that was a Marvin fought for type of thing, was Bobby Williams. He was a guy that came in and he was a very stable, very solid player for this offensive line. That was one of the best in football for quite a few years. So, that's really kind of the exception of the rule there when it comes to offensive guard. Now, the other thing real quick before we transition from Lapham to Paul Daner Jr., you might have touched on a little bit, but there is talk. I think they're kind of talking potentially, and both guys have kind of said it, that the Bengals are maybe looking a little bit seriously if they find a good option at tackle to get out of that Bobby Hart deal.
Yeah, I think it's just assumed now that like either before free agency or sometime before or after the draft, like Bobby Hart's going to be gone. It's just the $6 million that they save getting him off the books is just too valuable for them to, as opposed to just keeping him on the roster as a backup. Like that's, especially in a year where the salary cap's going to be, it's not raising by $10 million, it's being dropped by $20 million projected. Like that's space that they can't afford to not have. If the alternative is just keeping him as depth, and even if he would be like a decent swing tackle or maybe a guy that you can put in at guard in emergency situations, like he's just too expensive to keep on the roster. And, you know, credit to him for, I guess, maximizing whatever potential that he had in his time here. But I think they realize the time is up and they need a serious answer there, which is something that I think everyone has said and has alluded to at some point.
Yep. So let's move on a little bit to what Paul Daner Jr. said. He is hearing that, and there's an interesting line that he put. I guess I could share this for you. Basically the Bengals have not lived up to their end of the bargain when it comes to stocking the offensive line front of their franchise quarterback, and not only that, but their franchise quarterback that's on a rookie quarterback deal. Here's kind of some lines here I thought was interesting. The Bengals failed with their approach to the offensive line last offseason. They prioritized other positions in free agency and the draft while betting on development up front. The bet lost. It lost huge. It cost people jobs, Joe Burrow, a healthy left knee, and endangered the entire operation of head coach Zach Taylor's rebuild. So he goes on to say, John, and this is a subscription website and a subscription article, but he goes on to say that he thinks that the Cincinnati Bengals are going to spend some money on the offensive line and potentially, going against what Lapham said, maybe even at guard.
Yeah, I think it's important because this doesn't get posted and published based off of like Daniel Jr.'s like inferring.
Yeah,
this is him hearing stuff from inside the organization. The man has sources. Like, he predicted most of what was going to happen last offseason. I believe he name dropped both DJ Reader and Trey Waynes as legitimate targets. He predicted the entire purge of that side of the ball. Like, this is something that is definitely being talked about. And just very similar to last season, it's being spurred by desperation. Like, last year, they knew that they needed new talent all over the defense, and that's exactly what they did. Now they know that they need to actually fix the offensive line because number 9 went down screaming in pain and has a 9-month recovery path. Like, that isn't something that they're just brushing off to the side. Like, he is saying exactly what every Bengals fan on Twitter and on Cincy Jungle and all over the internet is saying. They need to actually invest in the offensive line, and that seems to be the plan right now.
That's now whether that's Joe Tooney, whether that's Brandon Scherff, whether that's a guy that is starting to be talked about more, in credit to my co-host John Sheeran bringing him up early in the free agency talk process, Taylor Moton, a guy who has been extremely durable and a very, very solid starter in the NFL since joining the Panthers. He's a guy that could be – now there's talk, though, that he could be franchise tagged, so we'll see what happens there. But, you know, he could be an option for this team. There are others out there, but – the status quo is obviously not cutting the mustard, and it sounds like, at least according to Paul Daner Jr., that the Bengals aren't going to sit idly by and do nothing based on what happened this season with Joe Burrow's injury and all of that.
And I want to bring up like the guard versus tackle debate, because like I kind of touched on this on Twitter, but I want to basically start a dialogue about it. Because like Lapham said, you know, traditionally that they don't value guard. And that's also kind of what Daner Jr. Wrote about. Like, if there was going to be an addition, it would be a tackle and all that stuff. Because, like, looking at the draft history, looking at who they've extended, it's always been a tackle. They've always just pushed the guard spot to the side. Before last season, aside from DeMonta Pecco, have the Bengals ever looked at and prioritized nose tackle? Because that's exactly who they brought in DJ Reader last year. Like, DJ Reader was not brought in cheap. He was the highest paid nose tackle in the NFL last free agency. Like, he got exactly what his market was and what he was projected to get. The Bengals spent a pretty penny on the top player at his position. The thing is, nose tackle is not valued that high. It's not a premium position. It's not wide receiver. It's not cornerback. It's not offensive tackle. DJ Reader's a 3 technique, and if he rushes the passer, he's not coming to the Bengals because he's making a ton more money. Then we go to August. Joe Mixon gets signed for a market value deal. Why? Running back is not a premium position. They can afford it. It's in their pay range. The only reason why they're going to extend Jesse Bates is because he's not a cornerback. If he was a cornerback, they would be projecting his compensatory pick right now. They're going to extend him because safeties are cheaper than cornerbacks. This, I think, is an angle that's not being talked about right now. Guards are cheaper than tackles. So a market value deal for a Joe Tooney or Brandon Scherff, it's going to be cheaper than a market value deal for a left or right tackle, especially in the Taylor Moton range. I just think that that's something that we need to remember. Like, just because they're going to be serious about spending at offensive line, I don't think it just automatically means they're going to pay for a top tier tackle. And really, there's only one aside from Trent Williams that they can afford that would fit that bill, and that's Taylor Moton. And like you said, he could be franchise tag or even extended by the Panthers. So once Moton goes off the market, the top tier tackle market is done. You're going to the second level already. With the guards, though, both Tooney and Scherff were just franchise tags, so odds of them both returning to their original teams are very low. So at least one of them is going to be on the market, and both of them are not going to make as much real money, guaranteed money, not the total money that you see in the Twitter posts. They're not going to make as much as those tackles. I just think that those guys just make more sense for what the Bengals would be willing to pay come free agency. I just think it's an angle that no one's really talking about.
That's a fantastic point. Fantastic point. And last year, at this time, we were talking about a specific New Orleans Saints offensive lineman as a guy that I think a lot of people thought would have been, maybe it wasn't this time, maybe it was a little later, I can't remember, but Larry Warford was a guy, a name that was thrown out. And Larry Warford, I see Lawrence Hunter in the live Facebook chat talking about Larry Warford. he was a guy that was talked about, and then all of a sudden he opted out. I think the Bengals had a little interest in him, and then, you know, he opted out of the season, so that fizzled out. Now, that may be an option that they look to explore if he, you know, he comes back again, and that's somebody they could pay some decent money to, maybe not break the bank, because they can use the argument, well, he didn't play football last year, whatever, you know, whatever that may be. And, you know, kind of cut some costs a little bit, but still get an effective starter on an interior lineman. And to your point, have, you know, spend money on a non-premium position, but still spend money on an upgrade at the offensive line. There are options like that potentially out there if they get creative.
Yeah. And I think ideally, at the end of the day, if they're able to get an upgrade offensive tackle, I think they're going to prioritize that, because they may feel like tackle is a bigger need. And that's, I guess, where the search starts. But when it all comes down to it, and what options that they have available and how much money they feel like they are comfortable spending, I think we can't forget about a top tier guard in that situation. But at the end of the day, both the tackle and guard markets are pretty similar. They're just, there's a couple of names at the top, and then it's just a big drop off after that. So it's honestly a good year to attack the offensive line in the draft, because there seems to be a ton of talent there. But like we talked about, they can't go into the draft needing to get multiple offensive line. They need to get that problem solved before that.
They hate going into the draft with glaring needs. They've talked about that. And whether they, you know, how the fans view a glaring need and how they view a glaring need, sometimes they're not in alignment. But you spoke to Duke Tobin last year, and he basically, you know, reiterated the fact that we like to mostly go best player available. We don't like to sit here and have our hand forced at a position and, you know, basically reach or overcompensate for roster deficiencies to take a lesser player. They just don't like to do that. Now, when they in years past have not gone big in free agency, and then they try and utilize that approach in the draft, that doesn't always work out in their favor. Last year, it kind of, the stars aligned a little bit. They made some splashes in free agency, and then they got the star picks, and Pro Football Focus nominated their draft class as the number one by their metrics in terms of performance in 2020. So a lot of things lined up, but I mean, you're right. I mean, they cannot go into the draft needing 2-3 immediate starters. It's just, you know, and if you're expecting to get that out of the draft, it's just not going to happen day one. You may nail one, maybe two if you're lucky, but that's just not how, you know, that's just not really how the dice end up rolling.
Yeah, it's true. Like that's a desperation move, and that's something that I think they just want to avoid. Like, yeah, they I think still value some of the players that they have here, and that's part of why Pollock was brought in, because they believe that he can develop those players better than Jim Turner. But like these decisions that they're going to make, it's not spurred off of a proactive thinking. Everything that they do that we think is progressive, it's really just reactive. It's just them always being a little bit too late to address the situation. But when they finally decide to do such a thing, they tend to do it, you know, pretty aggressively. So we'll see how it happens. There's still 2 months before all this stuff really goes down, but the writing definitely seems to be on the wall with this.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So that's some of the news and notes and our opinions based on the headlines surrounding the Cincinnati Bengals. We've got a free agency profile to get to. We're going to start rolling those out weekly, as well as draft prospect profiles that we think the Bengals could be linked to or interested in. And of course, we've got another state your case. John, should I throw you a curveball and say we should do the free agency profile next because we're talking free agency, or do you want to end the show with that? I'll leave it up to you.
Let's go to the draft. I'm throwing the curveball back at you.
Okay, let's do it. So we'll get to our state your case in just a second. It does center around the NFL draft, so we'll get to that in just a second. But a quick reminder, get the show on your favorite audio streaming platform, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Megaphone, iHeartRadio. We're all over the place, so check it out. Leave us a review for the Cincy Jungle channel, whether it's our show, Matt Minnick's Chalk Talk, or Orange is the New Black, the podcast by Ace and Zim. They're all doing some great stuff, some great video work, some great podcast work. So we appreciate all the support. It was a banner year for our podcast channel last year, and we're hoping to make it even better for 21. We thank you for your support, but get the show how you can, and we'll keep bringing you some content. Last week, we debuted a segment called State Your Case, and in it, John brought the fire with the Joe Tooney versus Brandon Scherff argument and merits, you know, whatever you want to call it, merits or I don't know, demerits of either guy and who the Bengals should be targeting if they're gonna spend some of this money we've been talking about on the offensive line. But the other big debate as of now with the Bengals at the number 5 pick, and hopefully you saw our mock draft, our 3-round mock draft last week as well. We did that through Pro Football Network's simulator. The Penei Sewell fell to the Bengals at number 5. A lot of people don't think he's going to fall there. Penei Sewell and their simulation fell to him, so obviously we felt inclined, despite trade offers, to take Sewell at the number 5 position. Some of the scenarios that play out either through these simulators or in people's mind's eyes or what have you is that Sewell is gone, and the Bengals will have a choice between Heisman winner Devontae Smith and former LSU Tiger Ja'Marr Chase, exciting player who did not play in 2020. I think it was a combination of the COVID crisis, but also just kind of preparing for the NFL draft, it would seem. So the Bengals may have a major choice to make with Sewell, presuming Sewell's off the board, and I think we all think that he's going to be their top choice, one of their top guys on the draft board. They obviously don't need a quarterback, so that may be the guy that they want. But if he is gone, the Bengals may look at one of these two wide receivers. We've said it a ton of times. AJ Green's a free agent. Alex Erickson's a free agent. Mike Thomas is a free agent. And I'm missing somebody. I always miss somebody because there's four of them. John Ross, thank you. The four guys are impending free agents, and it's quite possible that most, if not all, of those guys will not be in stripes next year. So the point is that the Bengals may be looking at wide receiver with their top 5 pick this year, and it very well could come down to those two players. It seems as if people have their little camp of who they like, John. I obviously like both players. I think they're exciting players, and they bring a lot potentially to the Bengals offense. As I sit here today, and I watched a little bit of film again to prep for this, and I look at the measurables and you know that sort of thing, some other factors, and there are risks and rewards to both guys. I'm sitting here, and I like Ja'Marr Chase at number 5 over Devontae Smith. And I don't say that lightly because I think Devontae Smith brings a lot to the table, like I said. But there is a lot here. I went back and watched some highlights and of his touchdown catches. He had 20 of them in 2019. And I want to preface all of this by saying, yeah, it is. I get a little tentative about the fact that he didn't play last year, but you know, I think there's some understandable reasons behind that. It's the same kind of hesitation I have a little bit with Sewell, but there's some of the film speaks for itself. I look at Chase's film. I saw some of it again today, and you know, he had the 20 touchdown receptions with Joe Burrow in 2019. John, I'd have to go back and count, but the vast majority of them were 20, where the ball traveled 20, 25 yards in the air or more, By the way, a facet of the Bengals offense that has, that was sorely lacking even with Joe Burrow last year. There was ample separation off of, again, college defensive backs, but SEC defensive backs. Or there was a handful of other touchdown catches that were jump ball fades that were 10 or so yards out from the red zone. So the majority of his touchdown catches seem to play into the wheelhouse of the weaknesses that the Bengals are trying to improve upon on offense this year. Joe Burrow himself, when he went on the Herd on FS1, he said that he really wants to work on the deep ball. He said the same thing to the Cincinnati media when he returned to Paul Brown Stadium. So as of right now, the chemistry potentially with Joe Burrow, the size, and that deep ball capability. I know there's some of that with Smith. What I saw on tape when I watched some of it this week, I think I like Chase at 5 over Smith.
This is not going to be a very spicy debate because I agree with you 100%. I'm not sure the comment section does, but you might have reservations about him not playing. I have negative reservations about it. He didn't need to play a single snap in 2020, not because his quarterback would be from Joe Burrow to Miles Brennan, but I mean, I'm assuming he spent the entire offseason, quote unquote, just getting stronger and getting faster because he's already really, really strong and really, really fast. You have to remember, as a Blinnikoff winner in 2019, he was 19 years old. He was doing all that stuff as a teenager, going up against his SEC competition week after week. Devontae Smith is an incredible player and very talented, and I think we can all agree that he's going to be pretty successful early in his NFL career. But there does need to be said something about Ja'Marr Chase being a first-year starter at 19 years old and becoming a number one receiver in the best passing offense in college football and establishing that connection with the eventual Heisman winning quarterback and the first overall pick for the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. Everything that Ja'Marr Chase did is even more impressive for how young he was in doing it. And I think that is an incredibly relevant point of discussion when talking about who the Bengals will prefer. AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, John Ross, they all produced really early in their college careers and they all developed into really good college players at a really young age. Like AJ Green was 20 as a freshman because he was just really old. But as a freshman, he led that Georgia team in receiving yards. T. Higgins overtook Justin Ross really early in his career. Tyler Boyd had like 1,000 more receiving yards than any other Pitt player when he was a true sophomore as like 19. They value that a lot. So he had the production and he has the talent and he did all that at a really young age. And he just spent the last year just working on his craft. Like any negative that he had in 2019, you can just put on the fact that he was just so young. And the only slight negatives were just inconsistency. Sometimes he has some choppy footwork out of his releases or getting out of his breaks. Maybe he wasn't the fastest guy out there. And you know, it's really hard to gauge that on tape, but like he's going to check all the boxes. And I don't think there's a debate in this. I think Ja'Marr Chase is clearly the best receiver out of these two and will definitely be the receiver that the Bengals will prefer. And I think it should be noted that, you know, people say the Bengals don't need a receiver this early in the draft. They have T. Higgins, they have Tyler Boyd. Like you said, they're going to lose a lot of snaps of receiver. And I think it is important to fill and compensate for those targets that are leaving the offense. Like AJ Green had 100 targets this past year. John Ross had about like 10 or so in the first 2 weeks. Like there's a lot of targets that are on the table, and it would be nice, as long as the offense line is solidified, to fill those targets with an elite talent like Chase and a guy that is only going to get better and only going to hit the prime of his career when he enters that second contract in his mid-20s. So I think it's an easy choice here.
The other thing with it, I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, some sites, if you look at them, you know, they say they're both 6'1". Sometimes Chase is listed a little bit bigger. Smith is 175. Chase has quite a bit more bulk on him than that. I think he's, you know, probably about 25 or so pounds heavier, and it seems to be, you know, muscle and bulk, not the negative stuff. Look. Stat line for Devontae Smith: 117 catches, 1,856 yards, and 23 touchdowns this year. Absolutely amazing season. Here's the big disparity for me, John, aside from the little bit of the bulk that I like to see, because the Bengals are asking their receivers in this offense, they're asking them to make the contested catches downfield. They're asking them to make some of the tougher catches, out-muscle defenders. That's why I like the Chase pick a little bit more here. The other thing, John, and I guess this comes a little bit with grabbing 117 catches, but 15.9 yards per catch for Devontae Smith, definitely nothing to sneeze at this year for him. in 2019, 84 catches, 1,780 yards, a 21.2 yards per catch average by Ja'Marr Chase. Basically, 5.5 plus yards per catch more on average in his last season. And this offense needs big plays through the air. They had a few of them, but they missed on a lot of opportunities this year. And I think that Chase's ability matched with potentially some of the old chemistry with Joe Burrow. I think I got to go that route.
Like, and with Smith, people will knock him for his size. And there is a point to that. Like, it's hard to find in general, like, receivers who are less than 180 pounds, but at least 6 foot. And honestly, like, the best comparison I can think of is Paul Richardson, who was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks back in like 2014. Yeah. He was incredibly productive at Colorado. He ran like a 4.4 flat. So it's not a knock on Smith to be compared to a guy like Richardson, who eventually got a handsome contract with Washington, but he just kind of fell off, I think, a couple years ago. But when he was really good, he was really good in that Seattle offense. And I think that's a great like prospect comparison for Smith. But also, but I think the floor is just as high for Chase, but the ceiling is even higher for him for how young he is. The fact that he's that athletic for being 20 pounds heavier than Smith, and the fact that he did it at such a young age, like, there's just too much going for Chase. And like you said, like, I think Pro Football Focus had him with 25 catchable deep targets, and he caught 24 of them in 2019. Like, he was by far the most productive deep threat at receiver, and that's something that, like you said, the Bengals need. But also, on top of all of that, like, the last person he caught a pass from was Joe Burrow. Like, that chemistry is already there, and it's not like the defining reason why you take him, because I think we can agree that Burrow can establish chemistry with any receiver that you give him. But the fact that it is already there, and it's a top five pick, and you need that pick to be successful, I think it's a low risk but incredibly high reward pick, and that's why it'll be easy if the Bengals end up making it.
Kevin R. Reynolds in the Facebook chat said, Smith will not last in the AFC North. He's not physical enough. Yeah, he's fast, but one good hit and bam, shortened career. And Anthony Thompson follows it up with John Ross 2.0. I mean, I don't know about all that. I don't know about all that, but
it's hard to touch Smith, man. He's quick as hell.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know,
right.
It's Lamar Jackson. People say he won't last. He'll get injured. Like, it's hard to tackle him. So it's not a knock on Smith. It's just like those receivers are kind of rare. And it really is hard to project, you know, how they're going to do long term. And I think that's really the question with him.
Exactly. And the other thing, the other facet I want to point out here, there's some people saying, what about Terrace Marshall from LSU and, you know, Tony and all these other guys that are potentially going to be there at the top of round two. This isn't an argument to say they must draft Ja'Marr Chase. I'm saying if the argument comes down to those two guys, if Penei Sewell's off the board and they're talking wide receiver, and those are the top two guys, I think if you're the Bengals, you got to look at Chase. That doesn't mean, you know, necessarily that they need to go wide receiver at five and ignore it later on or go. Yeah, there are a lot of different options, but I'm just saying for this specific argument, number five, if it comes down to wide receiver, I think John and I are in unison here saying that Ja'Marr Chase probably should be the pick for the Cincinnati Bengals based on a number of different factors. So that's this week's State Your Case. We've got more of these coming. It's been fun. We had a little disagreement last week, a little bit of agreement last week, and then we're in sync this week, John. I feel good about it.
Yeah, honestly, maybe maybe an even better discussion would be Devonta Smith or Jalen Waddle, which maybe we can talk about in the future. But I mean, that's a whole other topic for another time. So let's move on to, I think, our first edition of this year of Free Agency Profiles. We kind of did this last year. We just, you know, highlight one potential free agent target for the Bengals this year. We're gonna start it, I guess. I'm not really contradicting myself, but we talked a little bit about guards and Joe Tooney and Brandon Scherff last week and a little bit earlier in the show this week. But I'm going to mention a tackle that is not really being talked about that much in free agency, because like we said, if Taylor Moten ends up getting tagged or he's just out of the Bengals price range, they're going to be looking towards the second and third tier of that position. And I think a guy that would make a lot of sense is Darrell Williams out of the Bills. I believe he didn't played tremendously well against the Ravens in that divisional game, but I think his career arc is definitely an interesting one. He was actually Moten's teammate for a season in 2017 and 2018, and he, I think 2017, which is when Moten was a rookie, Williams was an all-pro at right or left tackle for the Panthers, and then he had an unfortunate injury in 2018, and unfortunately that made him sign a one-year contract in 2019 as like a prove-it deal, and he didn't really play that well in that season. So 2020 offseason comes around, he signs a one-year deal with the Buffalo Bills, and he kind of returns to that top-level form in 2020. He was, I think, the second 22nd ranked offensive tackle for Pro Football Focus in terms of just overall offensive grade. But it's really just the fact that, you know, there's injury history there. There's a lot of inconsistency. The fact that he didn't really have a good season to like his third year in the NFL. So he's been in the league for 5 or 6 years. He's only had a couple of high-level productive years, and there's obviously injury issues. And the fact that he's coming off of a one-year prove-it deal and re-entering the market. So it seems like if the Bengals miss out on a Moten, like Darrell Williams kind of fits the bill of about who they would look for in terms of, I guess, right in the price range of who they would look at offensive tackle. Because, like we said, they're not going to invest a lot of money in that position because it is a premium position. But a guy that isn't going to be in that mid-tier market, I think Darrell Williams makes a lot of sense.
I do as well. Not a guy that a lot of people are talking about per se. 6'6", 330, played per Pro Football Focus, played over 1,000 snaps. He did have 9 penalties this year, allowed just 3 sacks, though. Overall, PFF score, John, 79.4 for the year. So pretty solid work by him, and a guy that, you know, I think the Bengals could look at as a, you know, a rental option. Like you said, kind of a different career arc to him. He was a 4th-round pick in 2015, so a little bit of a different career arc. But yeah, you know, he's a guy. There are a couple of these kinds of guys in this year's free agent class that seem to, you know, fit that same mold, and you know, kind of guys that might be, you know, acceptable starters, pretty good starters, probable upgrades, and but a good choice. And we all know, John, the Bengals like those old Buffalo Bills.
That's true. That's Cordy Glenn. That's Quinton Spain. Might as well just fill out the rest of the offensive line at right tackle now. It's just because, you know, the Bills are going to be dealing with the Josh Allen contract situation. He's going to be eligible for an extension this offseason. I think right now they're only at projected, you know, like somewhere in the $8 to $10 million in projected cap range. So there are going to be decisions that they're going to have to make. And because they just really attacked offensive line, just building it in front of Allen, like, they've got a lot of pieces there. I think they would feel pretty confident about bringing someone else in or maybe drafting someone to fill that spot. But like, what is his market going to look like? That's the biggest question here. Because in general, free agency is going to look a little bit differently because of the cap shrinking. Maybe guys take a little bit less money this season. Maybe they just accept a one-year deal so they can re-enter the market next season when the cap is well over $200 million. It could be a case for Williams, who's still only 28 years old. So he's got a couple years left before he can sign like maybe one final big deal. But, you know, it's unfortunate for him because, you know, 2018 was a big year for him. He only played 56 snaps. He had that bad injury. And I think that's why he kind of regressed in 2019 and unfortunately didn't return to that 2017 form. So it's been a little bit unfortunate for him, but, you know, finding his stride on a good team with Buffalo, I wouldn't be surprised if they allowed him to retest the market. And again, he's not going to break the bank. He's not going to reset the market at right tackle. It would make sense for that premium position for the Bengals to, I guess, fill it with a guy that would be affordable, especially once they shed the Bobby Hart contract.
You think he fits in with Frank Pollock and all of that? You think he fits in pretty well?
Yeah, like, because initially looking back at Cordy Glenn, which is, I mean, he was traded for when Pollock was here. I didn't like look at Glenn as a guy that would work well in his own scheme because of his size and what he does well. But I think if they were to be confident in Glenn and that type of athlete, meaning like one of the bookend spots, I think they would be also looking at Williams. And also just because like he's a solid option in a free agent class that's not really deep. So I think just naturally he's going to be more attractive because of how talented he is and how not talented the other options are, I guess. So I think they would find a way to make it work.
Good stuff as usual, John. That's our first free agency profile of 2021 as the Bengals look to potentially shore up the offensive line. Surely will not be the last. offensive linemen we profile on this. We'll be talking about free agency profiles. We'll be doing some NFL draft profiles and obviously some other stuff as well. And if you're just joining us, either maybe you missed the first part of the show or you're segmenting the first part and the second part if you're digesting the show later, another just a reminder of an announcement. We've got Ken Anderson and others coming on the program. Ken Anderson will either be joining us next Wednesday or the Wednesday after. We're working that out. So hopefully we can hammer that down and figure that out. But we have been in touch with him, and he is eager to rejoin us on the program. So we're excited about that and get you that interview. It'll be fun. John, let's drop the mic and get on out of here. We're making good time tonight. We're cruising. Mm-hmm. Making good time. What do you have for us before we hop out of here?
Yeah, so we had a couple of Bengals rookies in the news this week. You might have heard one of them, Joe Burrow. He is auctioning off some custom design cleats and donating the proceeds to the Athens Food County Pantry and some more good work that he's doing. But also, Hakeem Adeniji, the Bengals sixth round pick, he just got engaged today to his girlfriend of a couple of years. So good for him, good for those rookies. Moving on with their lives and making good strides. I think with Adeniji, it's just kind of nice to think about. Like he was a Jim Turner guy. He was brought in under Jim Turner's second year, but I think he's just the guy that they're going to be counting on as important depth. You know, Frank. He might not be a guy that Frank Pollock would have drafted or really would have prioritized in the draft or really thought really high of. But I think he has the right mindset and the right athleticism to, I guess, have value in what Pollock will look for in terms of just filling out the rest of the offense line. So Adeniji seems like a really nice guy. They've had nothing but great things to say about him. So congratulations to him, and hopefully it's just the start of a great time with the Bengals.
Yeah, good stuff there. To kind of piggyback off that a little bit, some more good news of a guy who he's an impending free agent, but he was a Bengal this year, Mackenzie Alexander, the weird and potentially had potential to be a very sad situation with he and his missing father over the summer. There were some assault charges that were brought upon him, and they have all been dropped. And not only that, the more important thing is that his father was found safe and healthy. So, good for him. Good vibes for Mackenzie Alexander. I think it was Ben Baby talking about he doubts that Mackenzie Alexander will be coming back, but didn't really extrapolate on that on Twitter, at least not that I saw. So that was kind of disheartening. I was hoping he would be a guy that the Bengals bring back. I think he deserves another shot as their slot corner. So did he give a reason? I don't know if I saw a reason to follow that up, John. Did you see that?
Yeah, I think Ben said that was more of his educated guess, but we're going to have him on the show again to really explain that.
Yeah, yeah. Ben's a good guest. He's been on our show a couple times. Great guy. And he'll have to explain himself on that one. And I just also, just to end it, I put out a plea for some help for just a small favor, and a number of you responded, direct messaged me to help me out with just a dumb little favor. And I just want to publicly say thank you to those of you who responded to that. I don't like asking for favors, but being geographically where I reside, when I need something in Cincinnati, it becomes a little difficult to get there. But I appreciate people who are willing to help there. That was nice, especially just for the sake of helping. It was nice. But that's all I got, John. Want to hop on out of here?
Yeah, let's go on out of here.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Get the show how you can on your favorite platform. Subscribe to the YouTube channel right under John's left shoulder there. You can click that icon and subscribe to our channel and get notified when we go live. You can also like the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. You can get notified when our show goes live or just The New Black goes live. All kinds of material, including stories on CincyJungle.com. Great ones like the guy next to me who writes daily for the site. Go check that out. Like the Facebook page. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We will see you soon. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.